Welcome to the Geek Girls Guide podcast number 14, recorded May 14th, 2010. Find us online at geekgirlsguide.com. So today it's our very first Geek of the Week podcast, and I'm welcoming Sarah Evans, also known as PR Sarah Evans on Twitter. And I've known Sarah for a few years, sort of peripherally in social, and we actually worked together. At one point, she helped me with some public relations. But she's gone on to bigger and better things, and I wanted to welcome her to our very first Geek of the Week podcast. And thank you, Sarah, for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me. And I've never been a Geek of the Week or a geek of anything. I've always just called myself that. So it's an honor and very exciting.
Oh, great. Well, I'm hoping that you can tell our listeners just a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Sure. That's always a very daunting question. So I guess I'm a PR person who happened to find a niche in social media, talking about PR and social media. I have my own company called Seven Strategy, and it's really just a PR and new media consultancy, kind of a small but mighty team, a small shop, but I guess that's where I'm at. It's not necessarily who I am. Social's always been a part of my life. I jokingly say I've been planning tea parties since I was 2 years old. I've always loved bringing people together, and then what happens when you bring the right people around the table, interesting possibilities can occur and excitement can build, and it eventually moved into motivating and mobilizing people around a cause, an idea, an issue, a product. And I don't know if that answers your question, but
it totally answers my question. We don't need an elevator speech. We're good.
Okay.
So what did you want to be when you grew up?
Probably a princess.
Sweet.
First.
You are the antithesis of me.
but that works, you know.
Yeah, I like it.
You know, that's when I was young, like really little. I think it was thanks to Disney movies. And then I wanted to be a librarian because my mom was a librarian, and I thought, and I still think she has one of the coolest jobs ever, to read and share with people and teach people to read. And then I wanted to, I think, take over the world.
Nice.
At one point. And I still don't necessarily know what I want to do when I grow up, but I just want to work and be around people, and I want to help bring structure to what can be chaotic or non-streamlined issues.
Cool. So can you tell me a little bit about the path that you have been on career-wise? How did you get to this place in your career?
Sure. Well, I've never had the title of princess, nor do I think I ever want that now. But I started my career out of college with a small button manufacturer in my hometown, and realized quickly that's probably not what I wanted to do. And I went to work for the largest healthcare system in Illinois and had an amazing opportunity there. They let me really grow and start my roots and grow into leadership in my early 20s, and I owe them a lot. And after that is when, then Nancy, you and I worked together when I went to work for a PR agency in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I got just amazing experience there, and then became director of communications at a community college, and all the while building an online network and new connections, and was able to then start Seven Strategy.
Great. So you referred to yourself as a geek, and I'm kind of curious, are you really a geek, and what does that mean to you?
I think I'm more of a nerd.
Oh, nice.
And I don't know what the exact definitions are. Geek to me means more tech savvy, in my opinion, means more tech savvy, more knowledgeable. So I will jokingly say that, but kind of more of a nerd because I think people assume that I'm a full-fledged extrovert, but I really, truly enjoy spending time by myself curled up with a good book.
Mm-hmm.
Love to read. It's one of my hobbies and favorite pastimes. So I guess when I put my glasses on and grab my book and sit in a corner with a Snuggie, I'd say that's pretty nerdy.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I can totally relate on the introvert thing. I think there's been a lot of discussion on the social web lately about introverts in business, and I'm one of them, and I always sort of gravitate to those discussions, so I hear you there. So my next question is, I know that you're very active in social, and I've sort of watched your follower base evolve, and I'm curious if you want to tell me a little bit about your sort of social existence, because rather than me saying, well, I guess I can say it. So, Sarah, you have a gabillion followers on Twitter.
It doesn't necessarily determine anything. I just shared a post this morning about how the number of followers you have on Twitter doesn't determine your influence, and it doesn't, and I don't measure myself by that. Honestly, I've always been interested in technology and how it affects communication. Mm-hmm. In fact, I was just contacted by my sixth grade teacher who I've been trying to find. He was the one who taught me to write my first computer program. Yes. And it was so, I just had so much fun. And then started trying to realize, how can we use this to stay in touch? And I grew up in the generation of instant messaging and text messaging, so it was part of the communication structure I knew. And when I got into the professional workplace, I immediately started applying what I knew. For example, in teams, especially in PR, you work with the media quite frequently, and you might have a team of people who have different answers that you need. I started using instant messaging to say, hey, we shouldn't have to put the media on hold and run to different offices. Let's just instant message one another and streamline this process. And I have a strong non-for-profit background. And as I started to dig more into online tools and technology, I could see I was moving way too fast for a lot of organizations. And it was really difficult for me because I was completely motivated by that. So originally I said, okay, so I can't promote client XYZ on social media. I don't really have anything else to promote. I'm going to promote me. I'll do that. I'll show them that I know how to use it. So it started as this way to, I'll show people I know what I'm doing. And I think I'm a natural connector or networker, so I just applied what I do in real life online, and I guess it's grown.
Oh, nice. That's great. So let's talk about all those followers, because one of the questions, and I haven't even looked at your profile lately, but I think
that's okay.
On Twitter it's like 40,000 followers, something like that?
Something like that.
Okay, and I know the number doesn't matter, but I'm curious about how you manage that kind of an audience.
Number one, 40 plus thousand, it's not like that number of people are really following what I say all the time nor care about me, at all times. But I'd say that there's, a large chunk of that. I don't want to use the word tactic because I think that makes it not as personal, but there are different methods that I use to stay connected with people. And I'm just pulling up my account. So I follow 14,000 people technically, but I actually have that whittled down. I have Twitter lists, a TweetDeck application, and mobile alerts. And I have people set up on Twitter lists, a lot of news outlets where I want to just check in daily to see what they're doing. On TweetDeck, I have people whose tweets I never want to miss, so I can check in any time during the day and see what they've talked about. And then I have mobile alerts with information, news, and people who I want real, I never want to miss what they have to say, and I want it real time. So that's how I deal with that side of communication. Then actually engaging an audience, I love asking questions. I've always loved asking questions to see how people answer. And on most of my social network profiles, I ask a lot of questions to people. And while I can't always respond back to everyone who answers, I can send a general response. Or if I notice a trend in questions coming into me, and I know that I can't reply to everyone individually, I will write a blog post, or I'll do a mass email. I'll do something to try to reach people. And I've built in different tools as this has grown to meet the amount of requests coming in. And in fact, I do a lot of private messaging with people too. I don't always want to clog every single stream I'm in with just all of my replies to people. So, but I'm not perfect. I make mistakes. I can't always get back to everyone. I've definitely seen a correlation between the number the numbers in my networks and the amount of communication coming in on a daily basis.
Interesting. So tell me how you use Facebook then professionally.
I don't necessarily think I use it professionally, even though my family, friends, social media friends, they're all kind of intertwined there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't share anything, and I didn't, even before I allowed people from social media in my Facebook page, I don't share anything there I wouldn't be comfortable with everyone knowing anyway. But I use it as a chance to also, so it's another place I ask questions. I'm probably more promote-y about myself there, but it's just because I get excited about things and that's where I tend to share it in a different way. And people can comment on it and talk about it. But definitely more question asking. I post photos there, but I now have a fan page or a like page, whatever you want to call it, because I reached my max capacity of friends that you can have, which, you know, obviously I'm not technically friends with everyone who's in my network, but I've got the fan page now I'm trying to manage, and I'm still learning the nuances with what I want to post there, because there are people who I've got like several hundred friend requests sitting in my inbox for Facebook, and then they go over to my Facebook fan page or like page, and I want to make sure I'm connecting there also.
Sure. So on the topic of Facebook, and I haven't, you know, I am a follower of yours, occasionally, you know, I'll jump in on a discussion, but I haven't really seen you take any sort of a position on the whole Facebook privacy issue, and that may be because I missed it.
You did. I just wrote a post yesterday or 2 days ago. You can suck it, Facebook.
Okay, good. So do you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah. In fact, I'm going to pull up the post.
Great.
So it says, you can zuck at Facebook, privacy protest. I also saw some stat today that the Facebook privacy policy has more words than the U.S. Constitution.
I saw that too.
It's crazy. But it's really confusing to me if I read through the settings. So there's an issue with the diminishing amount of privacy that we have on Facebook, mm-hmm. and then the complexity of the communication to figure out how to change your privacy. And I don't believe that we always need to opt out to have privacy, that it should be something that we're given first, and if we want to increase the level of information that people have, that we should be able to do that. It shouldn't be a default. So part of this article, I was just recapping things in, I guess, layman's terms, so people could understand a bit what the Facebook privacy policy looks like. And so I did a comparison of the policy circa 2005 versus April 2010.
Nice.
Yeah, and then talked about this privacy protest, which I'm joining, just called Facebook Protest. And it's on June 6th.
I saw that on your stream, yeah. And I'm going to join it too. That's great.
Awesome. So Alana Joy, she's at Alana Joy on Twitter, initiated this. And I like it because it's just not signing into Facebook for the day, which is fine for me. It's not saying I'm giving up on Facebook forever, but it's more to send a message that says, you know, we're not happy with this, and, you know, and we don't hate you, but here's an opportunity to make things right, and it's a shame that we have to go to this point to get attention.
That's great. I totally agree. I think it's an easy way to make a statement, but we're not being so dramatic and over-promising what we can do actively. So yeah, that makes great sense. So I'm going to ask you about something, and I don't know how you feel about talking about this, but I'm a subscriber to Vanity Fair. It's the one magazine I actually get in my mailbox because there's something about it.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was happy to actually see somebody I knew appear in Vanity Fair.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell me how that came to happen?
Sure. I mean, literally, it was I got a call.
Okay.
From Vanity Fair, and they said to you, are you available? We'd like to have you be part of a piece we're doing of women on Twitter. And it was Vanity Fair, and I love fashion, love it. So, I mean, just as a, like, being a woman who mm-hmm. likes fashion and who is a reader of Vanity Fair, there was no way I was turning it down.
Right.
Like, I was all in. Went out to LA for a photo shoot, loved it, did, you know, an hour and a half interview with the journalist. And then when the article came out, I was a bit shocked to see the angle that had been taken with it.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about that, or is that something you want?
No, it's totally cool.
Okay.
So the title of the article is America's Tweethearts, and I can live with that. Like, it's not a big slam to me at all. In fact, I don't like the title, but it is what it is.
Sure.
But then when reading the article, I felt like it quite diminished the accomplishments of the women in the article. I feel like we came across more as cheerleaders as opposed to an actress, a strategist, another journalist, the brand manager for Coach. You know, it was just, there were a lot of misses, I think, in there. And as well as, you know, it was six white women. There were no women of color, although Sarah Austin, I believe, is Hispanic, but she's very light skin, blonde hair, so you wouldn't necessarily know that.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at her. So, you know, there were a few misses there, but I think it also opened an opportunity. There were a lot of conversations happening after that article came out about other women who do great things, and not just on Twitter, a women of color issue. In fact, myself and several of the women in that article are putting together a panel to address the issue, so it doesn't drop and go away. So out of every negative, at least I can find a positive and a good thing. And heck, it did really good things for my business. I think a lot of people maybe didn't even read the article, but now they heard I was in Vanity Fair, so that was cool, and they emailed me and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I was surprised that it took the angle that it did, but I was happy with the dialogue that occurred after it. So
yeah,
I'm glad that you have seen sort of the positive, or benefited from the positive spin on it. And I guess one of the things that I'm curious about is what you think is next for you, and what you think is next for social as a means of communication with broad audiences on a wide variety of topics. What's coming next?
Well, I'm not necessarily a thought leader to know from a tech standpoint what's coming next. I'm usually, I don't even consider myself an early adopter. What I do is find out something that's already existing and discover a way to better use it for business or communication or connecting. But I think in a very general scale, companies are going to have to figure out better ways to stay connected with audiences that they're building online. Meaning if, Facebook owns your content, and if Twitter went away tomorrow, how do you ensure, you know, sustainability in your networks? How do you move just measuring who's just talking to you to really creating a better customer experience for them utilizing new media tools? So that's kind of my thought on that. And as far as what's next for me, I'm beginning to move into the video space, web video space a bit more. I'm soft launching a live web show just called Sarah Evans Live, not very creative, but where I'm interviewing celebrities, newsmakers, interesting people, to give kind of the everyman, the everywoman, insight into people we want to learn more about. And I did it for a few reasons. One is because I was consulting clients to consider video tactics, and I try to test out every single online tactic before I recommend it to someone. It also is great for generating content for myself, and then hopefully it will be another path.
Well, that's great. So I just have a couple more questions. One is, who influences you?
Who influences me? Number one, and I know it's the cheesy answer, but my mom and dad, for sure. Because the skill set that they taught me, and the life lessons that they taught me have applied my whole life. And I continue to use those lessons online, like not burning bridges, not being afraid to make new connections, try new things, just the basics. And then people who influence me online and who I learn from, changes, frequently. I discover new people all the time and for different reasons. From a PR perspective, Peter Shapeman and Brian Solis are two influencers for me. From a tech space, both Robert Scoble and I guess Pete Cashmore and the Mashable team are great there. From a social good component, I love working with Stacey Monk and Sloan Behrendt and Melissa Rowley. And who else? From just a really smart person category, Jeremiah Oyang. I learned a lot from him, and Steve Ravel. So those are a few of my influencers.
That's great. And you know, the Geek Girls Guide is really about focusing on an audience that exists outside of the geek vacuum.
Okay.
And that's who we try to talk to more often than not. And so I guess my last question for you is, if you could leave them with a little bit of advice or a little bit of, or a tip, something that helped you on your career path or some bit of geekery that you feel they shouldn't live without, what would that be?
I live and die by two things, and it's both my life mission statement and the hedgehog concept, which is identifying the thing you can be the very best at in the world and focusing the majority of your time and attention on that thing. And on a broad scale, mine is connecting with people, bringing people together. So whatever tools allow me to do that, that's where I focus my time and attention. And then my life mission statement, which I keep with me at all times, but it's, I run unabashedly free through this one life without fear. I embrace the unexpected. I believe in abundance. I live.
That's great. I appreciate that. That is a perfect note to end on. Sarah Evans, thank you for being our very first Geek of the Week. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Sarah.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.